I'm Blair Sanderson.
And I'm Ken McIntosh.
And this is the Surf Fantasy Podcast.
Yew!
Back off the top, holding speed well. It's getting nice and hollow. Fanning pulls in, makes it without a problem. Layback hack to finish. A timeless style here.
Yeah, Mick Fanning. Looking.
That's who we just heard there.
Spicy off the top of
That's
his
right.
Feet.
Let's get your microphone like right in front of your face,
sorry.
Everybody.
Oh, do you technical expertise yeah, from
listen
Blair
to how
Sanderson?
Great the sound quality is? I apologize off the bat for the sound quality issues we've been having over the last couple of days.
Yeah,
still trying to figure it out. You know,
no, well,
do you
we're
know
doing better.
Do you know what the problem was last time?
I think you told me we were recording off the computer mic that yeah. None of our mics.
Yeah,
you'd have to know where we're sitting here, but we have two very fancy microphones set up. There are wires everywhere. They're going into a mixer. We're seeing levels on the screen. None of that was actually working in the
right.
last record.
So we
record.
Were taking all of this care to talk into the microphones when in fact what we were doing was just getting picked up on the computer thing. And I was even playing with like the mic knobs, like, he's coming in a little low. I'll adjust midway through, thinking that that would do something. It did nothing.
Yeah. No, well, I trust Blair exclusively with the technical. So when it fails, it
yeah.
is all on him.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, I can hear myself in the headphones and it sounds great.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
And I don't wear headphones because I find it uncomfortable.
Welcome to the podcast. This is a podcast all about fantasy surfing. So we go through the Surfer Magazine Fantasy website, and this podcast is all about, you know, looking at surfing through the lens of fantasy surfing.
Yeah, we're all just trying to pick the best teams and win this trip to Turtle
yeah.
Bay.
And so we should point out where we are in terms of the contest. We've just completed day one, and so we're about maybe a third of the way through heat round two.
Yes. How are you doing so far?
This is my favorite time of the contest.
Really?
Yeah, man.
It's full of possibilities.
Yeah, you know, yeah. like no one's out yet. And so, but it's underway. So I'm feeling good that things are happening. So, but it did. And one thing though, that I'm starting to learn too, is that don't get too happy with early positive results, you know, because they don't mean anything.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even really get too stressed out. I mean, if I get people that are going out in round two, I'll start to get a little worried. But I try not to get too worried until round three is over because,
yeah.
I mean, as you know,
that's
from
where,
our last contest
you know.
In
that's
Fiji.
That's where you know where you are.
Yeah. I mean, Blair had eight people
through. Yeah.
I had six. I ended up doing eight through to round three. I had six through to round three. I ended up doing much better than he did in the last contest.
Yeah. Because like the where it is now, like, so for instance, if you look at where we're at now, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, hey, I'm doing good. I got a lot of my guys through. So for instance, I have all six through or six through with two to go. And so no eliminations, right?
Yeah.
But then if you look at who is actually out, we've got this Stephen Sawyer.
Yeah.
Sawyer. So
no.
He's out.
Local wild card.
Right? Nobody has him. Alex Ribeiro. He's out. Nobody has him. Kai Otten. He might have been a dark horse pick for a lot of people, you know, that he had a possibility to do well there. He's out. And then Keanu Singh is out. So, I mean, if you think about it, most people at this point playing Surfer Fantasy probably have all their people still on.
Yeah, it's true. I feel a little bad for Keanu Singh. He had a good first round heat. Obviously didn't win that heat. He ended up in round two and then just fell apart in
yeah.
round two up against Ace Buchan, who a lot of people think might actually make a run at the contest. But I got to start with Mick Fanning.
All right, well,
get
that's
right
why we
it.
Put him right at the thing. I'm going to fix your microphone.
I'm sorry.
Because you don't like it there. Right? There
well,
go.
Yeah, just see, I don't know where to look,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
where to look.
Is that more comfortable, right?
This is good,
okay.
Yeah. So this is what happened to me. So you got to understand where we are. We're in the East Coast of Canada.
Yeah.
So given our time zone, the contest, it started at, you know, sunrise in Jay Bay, South Africa. It was 2 a.m. in the morning here. I was risen from a deep sleep. I was actually mid-dream. I was dreaming that there was a paper jam at work. And I was furiously pulling paper out, trying to fix it. That has nothing to do with anything. But I woke up and I thought, man, so early. I got to check my phone, which is right by my bed. I looked at my phone and I saw the WSL alert.
Nice.
That round one was starting.
Yeah.
So in bed, I turned my phone on, thinking the sound's off. Sound is totally on. I wake my wife and my dog up.
Yeah.
They're not impressed.
No. And you're watching surfing in the middle of the night.
Exactly. So I head out to the couch. But honestly, it was like I feel like I felt the power of Mick Fanning across the ocean, you know, into my bedroom, and it rose me from my slumber so I could see, you know, his triumphant return to Jeffrey's Bay a year
nice.
After the shark attack. And he was on fire. I mean, there's been a lot of talk beforehand that, you know, he's always a favorite out there. There was some talk about this injury. I thought Peter Mel broke it down really well, you know, describing that, you know, a high ankle sprain. He was comparing it to basketball in the webcast.
Yeah.
And says that it's a type of injury that NBA players often get. And it is a type of injury that they'll actually play through.
Yeah.
Because while there is sort of stabbing pain associated with, it's not the type of thing that's necessarily going to get worse by performing on it.
Right.
So you saw Mick was well taped up.
Would you ice it before you go out, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, you tape it up.
Take some drugs, right? You could take some painkillers.
Yeah, but it's the type of thing you can work through. It's not like it's going to get worse by competing on it. And he was taking every wave. I mean, you could just tell he was leaving nothing to chance. He was catching waves when he had priority. He was catching waves under priority. And, he just smashed the heat.
What's his percentage? How many people picked him up anyway? Let's just check that out right now. Mick Fanning, where is he?
Yeah, I know he's not in the top five because I have the top five in front of me, but I bet he's close behind.
He's right there at the bottom. You see him? 39% pickup.
That's actually much lower than I thought. I wonder if that's people that haven't been updating their teams.
No. You know, it's the injury, man. That's what it is.
Really?
A lot of the advice columns are saying, watch out. There's a big question mark beside him because of that injury.
Yeah. I mean, the only place I could see the injury really coming into play, I know you've looked closer at the forecast than I have, but my understanding is that we're going to get into a few sort of smaller, inconsistent, a little wonky days in the midway.
I wouldn't really want to guess. I think that they'll run again following the first day.
No, I think tomorrow will still look pretty decent. I think where he might have trouble, if it does get small and all of a sudden we're not looking at that sort of classic lined up Jay Bay where it's all about really timing the section and being on the right part of the wave and wave knowledge, and it turns more into a bit of a groveling fest where people are getting scores with doing airs and just trying to do things that you don't traditionally associate with Jay Bay, he might run into trouble. I could see the ankle playing in there, but as long as these sort of timing and these long swooping carves and the odd barrel are at play, I think he's looking really strong. Glad I have him on my team.
At 39, man, that looks like a good pick all of a sudden.
Yeah, is he on your team?
No, he's not on my team.
Really?
For me, what I end up doing is looking for reasons not to pick people, because I want everybody on my team, right? So I'm like, okay, you kind of almost have to eliminate those top guys. So for me, that ankle injury was one of the reasons. Certainly not the shark business. There's all this talk, is he going to have some kind of a psychological issue there?
Yeah, but, I think he's gotten well over that.
Yeah, he's over, that seems to me presumably he's been warming up there already. Anyway, it's not like that heat is the first time he's been in that spot.
Oh, no. I mean, even his first return to Jay Bay, the WSL, to their credit, actually had it on camera and you could see it. And I mean, people say it might play in his mind. I mean, I think if he was to see another Finn, it might play into his head. But I think he just looked like a guy that said, look, he knows he can compete at this wave. He knows. I've heard different things. I heard he had already secured a spot on the tour next year. With his performance in Jay Bay, and then I heard that was false, and it's actually that he's very close.
Okay.
So I think he realizes all he needs is one more strong result, and then he really can, take all of Europe off and not worry about, schlepping over to Southern California for those.
I'm glad you're couching this in uncertain terms, though. The fewer inaccuracies we can put on this podcast, the less editing for me. Thanks,
that's
bud.
True. No. Well, I... yeah. Anyway.
The thing is, nobody knows about them because I take them all out. That's the thing. True. You can take everything you hear on this podcast to the bank because afterward, everything we say is fact-checked to a certain degree.
Yeah. You might be going a little far on that.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Yeah. No, we're doing our best, folks.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of sharks, check out this video.
We're developing a smart ocean buoy that can detect the presence of sharks at our beaches. It has the real potential to protect swimmers, surfers, and the sharks themselves. It could be the biggest.
Yeah, so this is a video of the technology that is being used at Jay Bay.
Yeah. Smart buoys?
Clever buoy. So I guess that what they were doing in Australia is they were going back and forth with two jet skis that had little sonar or something, and then they've upped the ante, and at this particular spot, they've got these buoys that will apparently can detect the specific, thumbprint or fingerprint or whatever of a shark. They know what it looks like. Send it to the guards. Everybody out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk in the run-up. I mean, I've heard them described as sort of glorified fish finders.
I think that's what it is.
Technology that's been around since I was a 9-year-old sort of jigging cod on Lake Bredor. So not necessarily. I'm sure they're more advanced than that. There was also a lot of speculation that we would have a lot of delays. But as far as I know, and I did catch,
delays because of sharks?
Well, yeah, because the whole thing, people were speculating that what if there are a lot more sharks under there than we even know? Or what if they're getting false hits off other
types
of fish?
They bring these things over and they're like, whoa, there's sharks here all the time.
Yeah, other speculation that this is purely for show and that, everyone realizes, there's sharks out there, but we need to do something to put, people's minds at ease, but we're not going to be stopping this contest every time we see a fish.
Here's an interesting fact. Guess how many shark attacks there have been in South Africa since Mick Fanning?
I'd say two.
Yeah, there's been like three.
Yeah.
So it's not and were even they even that at big Jay of Bay? A deal. They don't. Actually, I do have it. So it was so cool, man, because I went, I looked on this website, and it was called Shark Attack, and it basically is like a composite of all shark attacks, like a list of where they were. So yeah, so they have July 19th. Would really? Have been that's the Mick Fanning attack, right? Oh, but it was okay. So cool because like it's just a number, and then you click on it, and it just says Mick Fanning spot whatever, like and like it would any other name, and it makes no reference to it being in a contest at all.
Okay,
so it's pretty cool, which makes it almost feel like it's accurate because you know it's not designed to track competitive surfing shark attacks, it's just shark attacks in general. So anyway, the next one in South Africa was then on October 25th, and that was at Still Bay, which is in Western Cape. And then on December 8th, there was another one. And that was at like M-Paid or something like that. My handwriting's terrible. And then the last one. So the last shark attack that's happened in South Africa was on April 22nd. And that was at like Roberge Break in Western Cape. And basically, and then it does say that two of them were surfing and one of them was swimming and paddling and one was surf skiing. I don't know what that is. Surf/skiing.
I think
skiing.
That's like when you're on the, I think that's the kayak. In? No, that's like, they look like a kayak, but they have no top to them.
Oh, right.
On top of them.
Right.
Call them a goat boat, if you will.
And all were injury free, apparently.
Oh, I was just going to ask, does it track the level of injuries?
Yeah, they did.
Well, I guess if they call Fanning an attack, then maybe that's where they're setting the bar. So these aren't
what
just
what did they call them anyway? And you know what? I don't know what if they used the word attack or what, but probably would be encounter. I don't know.
And that actually, if you look at that, I don't have the stats for Hawaii in front of me, but just off the top of my head, I know of at least two bites last year during the winter in Hawaii.
Really?
So, I mean, it doesn't even make it.
Even
if you compare it to the place where they have contests frequently, it wouldn't even be the worst.
Well, you got to think that there are probably 20 people in the water almost at any given time at Jay Bay. And for there to be that few attacks, it really does put it into perspective, you know?
Oh, I mean, you can put it into perspective when you think that, you know, people were out surfing after the Fanning attack about two hours later.
Have you seen that video? There's a great video.
Yeah, I watched it on the net. And
thought that might be a good time to go surf?
No, not at all. I waited an hour.
I waited an hour. I love that.
No, he's a madman. I mean, he's been surfing that spot for so long, and he's really been, I think, I'm trying to look it up here quickly on my phone.
To me, it's just so classic. Just that bravado of being like, well, I waited an hour.
Yeah, he's the type of guy that's very in tune with nature. I mean, he's that type of person.
Well, yeah,
like he
feels that's why
that,
he goes finless.
You know, he knows Jay Bay, and he said he could actually feel at the time. So yeah, it's Derek Hind, who's been surfing finless for more than a decade now. And if I remember correctly, he actually said that he could just feel that the shark was gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's the type of guy he is. And he's incredible. Some of the videos, I mean, I'm glad you showed that video in particular, but anyone that wants to just see some wild lines, different than any other type of surfing that you'd see, check him out. And it's interesting that of late, you hear a lot on this podcast, or not on this podcast, but on the webcast, you'll hear a lot of comparisons to Tom Curran. Yeah. And I know we'll get to Connor Coffin, and that's a big comparison because they're both from Santa Barbara. But if just while we're on the topic of finless surfing, Tom Curran has also been experimenting with a lot
of crazy
finless surfing and surfing on
boards. Yeah, like he's like using one board to get onto another board?
Yeah.
So he's all about?
I mean,
he's like ditching
been
a board,
man. Yeah.
Letting that hit whoever while he goes off on this other little board.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. Finless revolution. Maybe that's where we're all headed.
I hope not. All right. So what's next on the list of things to talk about? Okay. So I'm just going to run through my team.
Yeah. Why don't you?
Let's do that. And then you can run through yours because we should all know what we're doing here. So my team looks like this. I love my team. And I took a screenshot of it. So here we go. Adriano de Souza.
Spending the big bucks on Adriano.
How is he still the most expensive guy? That's what I don't understand. He doesn't, you know what I mean? Like,
he's just been consistent enough not to lose his value. And he ended the year, obviously, ranked so high as champ. Yeah.
I feel like that's a problem with this system. You know what I mean? That they should drop. I don't feel like they drop the points. Like, do you think that on this site, right, that all of the players' money always adds up to the same thing? Like, so if someone goes up, someone else has to go down by the equal amount?
I don't think that's the case. I know if we could get on the message board, I know Groundswell spelled it out very specifically almost every season, exactly, you know, how they determine how much people go up and how much people go down.
Yeah.
And I think it's all relative to their previous performances. So if you're the most expensive and I mean,
the thing is, because I would guess that if you don't make round three, you go down. Right?
Yeah.
But presumably, if you make round three, you stay the same, and then you go up maybe anything quarterfinal or better. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, this, you know, but, we should put this on our list of questions, because I know Groundswell has offered to maybe come on our podcast.
We should talk to him.
And we'll ask him exactly
that. Because it's true that he feels really expensive. But anyway, the thing is that in part, I don't
mind. He's the world champ, though.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know, but that was last year, you know? And yeah. But that's the thing. Even the WSL, right? Like that now we're at a point in the season where they're not counting last year's results. They're not weighting last year's results as heavily. Like, you know how that every contest.
Yeah, they're
contest,
still included, but not as heavily.
Probably 20% of last year or whatever, right? So it's not that big of a deal. Whereas on Fantasy Surfer, he's the most expensive guy. So to me, that's a real disconnect. But part of it, though, is I think he's going to do well. And, you know, where is he now? Oh, yeah. So he's got 13% pickup.
Yeah, see, and that's a smart play by your... I mean, I didn't pick Adriano. I think you're
can't
right.
Pick everybody.
No, you can't pick everyone. I think you're right that he may do well. But I think you're playing, you know, you're playing the percentages game. This contest, I very much went with, you know, who I think is going to be in that final. Yeah. Like, I'm going to have all eight in the quarters. I mean, I'm at a point now where the only way I've already got throwaways this season. The only way I'm going to have any hope of winning my clubhouses, you know, winning glory is I'm going to have big results here on out.
Yeah.
And I mean, there is an argument to be made that you'll get those big results by playing the percentages, but I'm purely now just going on who I think is going to, as many people as I can get into the quarterfinals.
Right. Interesting stat about De Souza, though. He has made the quarters 6 out of 7 contests at J Bay.
Yeah.
Made the quarters. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. No, I know. I even considered him, but I just couldn't make the money work.
There you go. So then the other guy I put Muniz on there.
Yeah.
He was looking beardy and bigger than I had remembered him from the past.
Yeah, he was looking good, too, in his first heat. He had a couple good waves, but, you know,
didn't
couldn't
quite
take
make
the
it
win.
Through.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I think he's got a pretty big pickup, too. Yeah. And
who's
then,
he coming up against in round two?
Who is he coming up
against? I don't
against
think he's competed
two?
Yet.
Yeah. Sorry to everybody who's listening to this, like, well after round two is over. Because, like, this round two will be finished by the time we even get this thing on air. Oh, yeah, so I'm scrolling down. Yeah. Muniz. Where'd he go?
Yeah, no, so he's up, yeah. So
do
when,
you see him?
Yeah, he's right there. He'll be taking on Nat Young in round two, and that'll be the second heat. So
yeah,
if this does
be a
start
tough
at
one.
Sunrise,
that'll be a tough one.
You know, hopefully you're listening to this podcast tonight or in the middle of the night. Or maybe what you should do is just wake up, listen to this podcast, and then start watching the content.
Subscribe to the goddamn podcast, and then you'll know when it's out.
It'll be timeless.
But Stuart Kennedy, I got him.
Yeah, I picked up Stu, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is the thing. So, and for the listener, too, we make no conversation about our teams beforehand, and we happen to both pick that guy.
Yeah. Why did you pick him?
You know, I feel like, you know, he had such a great start, you know, and then he just went down and he just felt like a good dark horse to me. And I like, it's on a nice right-hander. Apparently he's good on like a long right-hander.
Yeah.
You're right that he's proficient on point breaks apparently and has cut his teeth on long right-handers. And, you know, and that's the thing. I think that he wants to be able to show that he can do it again, you know?
Yeah. I thought too, I mean, he's been described, I think it was in Sean Thompson. I was looking at his picks. For J Bay, and he just described him as, you know, he's a real point surfer. So he's the type of guy that, you know, he really is going out there purely to compete, which I thought is going to work well on sort of any type of wave. Because where J Bay, it could go any way, you know, like by Saturday, it could be massively huge.
Yeah.
We could have three lully days in between where they still got to run some heats because the long range forecast is looking bad. I thought he was the type of guy that, you know, could do well in any conditions. And I also think he's due for another strong result, but he's got a tough round two matchup. He's going to be up against Adam Melling in round two.
No, he's up against Dusty Payne.
Oh, that's changed since I looked at it,
really?
Which was just, you know, minutes ago, I swear. Like,
it was weird,
I came
too.
Over to your
like,
house.
Even looking at the round one matchup, though, it was a toss-up between him and Seabass, who are the same
Dusty.
Price. You know what I mean? And and of course, Seabass just killed it. And that always happens to me. You know, you're like, I should have picked that guy.
I was wishing I had Seabass because I picked him as my alternate and I was on the fence between the two of them. But I'm feeling really good about him up against Dusty Payne.
You like him against Dusty?
Yeah.
Hey, Dusty's been strong this year too, though.
Dusty Payne's strong, but Dusty isn't a point break surfer. Like, Dusty's a very much like a, you know, into surfing, you know, more critical reef barreling waves or like big, you know, vertical surfing, like off the top, but he's not like a long sweeping cutback type of guy.
And you know what too, is that Ed Stewart, I think, had performed fairly well despite poor results. Like, he wasn't surfing badly.
Yeah.
You know, so he might have had like a couple of unlucky waves or whatever. So I was pretty happy with him. Yep. So yeah, so we both have him. You don't have Muniz. Who do you have, man?
Well, I picked my team, and then the Fantasy Surfer, the contest that we play on their Twitter feed, they put out the top five most picked surfers.
Yeah.
And I realized I have all five of them. It doesn't bode well for my...
Explained you want to do well, and you're... It doesn't matter if you're joining other people.
Anyway, I'll start with John Florence, because 87% of people have picked John. Yeah. You're one of them. Yeah. I'm one of them. And frankly, that was a rough first heat for him, man.
Igarashi, who's the other guy we got to talk about.
Yeah, well, Kanoa, he is really... I mean, we talked about it in the last podcast.
He's never failed to make round three in his CT career.
Yeah, no, he's a competitive animal. I mean, he's definitely going to be on tour next year. He's doing well. And yeah, he took him out in round one, and it just looked like... I was just worried about John. Like, there was a time in Kelly Slater's career, too, where he just wasn't a good early morning surfer. And would always be that it's an early heat. And I wonder if John just needs some time to maybe wake up in the morning. But he came back big in round two. I'd watched that on
Heat
Analyzer right before I came over. And he was killing it. You could tell he really wanted it. He looked fired up. He pulled into the very nice barrels. You know, he had one wave where he got barreled multiple times and made it out cleaner than a lot of barrels we'd seen today. And his other wave was the exact opposite, like strong turns.
Really?
So I think he's good. I also like that I have him because I think he's the type of guy that he's going to be able to tackle anything that comes at him now. You know, whether it gets a little small and wonky.
Typically, his performances at JBay not so good, though, for John?
Yeah, no, it's never been one of his, premier events.
He's always one guy that I always kind of wish that I didn't pick when I have him.
Yeah, but it's tough.
Everybody's got him, so I think strategically
there's
sense.
A great video, too, out before the contest of him practicing his airs on one of the smaller days.
He always has a reel that comes out right before a contest.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe that's
you know, one. Like, you're looking at it, it's like, oh, yeah, he's killing it. Yeah. You're going to put him on, you know? It's funny how he gets that video, too. Like, no one else has a video on the WSL website before it. But he does. It's like a little highlight package.
No, everybody loves John. And he's one of the, I think, the two I'm John ads they have running on this one. So it'll be hearing a lot of his name.
You got Kelly Slater?
I do have Slater, and I'm feeling...
Bad pick.
That's what I'm gonna tell you. He wasn't looking sharp, man. I'm glad he made it through, obviously.
Yeah, that's right.
But I'm worried about him, man. Like,
The thing is, too, is if the conditions go south, he's going to not perform.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And that's why he's not on my team.
And I think today was indicative of that, because I think his performance at this point in his career is totally tied to the quality of waves. So if you're looking at a Fiji where the waves are great, he's going to perform great. If you're looking on a day like today where it was solid conditions, but they weren't epic, then he's going to perform good.
Okay.
You know, good wave, he's going to perform
good. He's as good as the wave.
But he didn't perform, you know, he didn't push... past the quality of that wave to some of the performances we saw from other people.
Right.
And I also would argue, even in the heat that he did squeak through in his second round, that he might have, he got through in the first round, sorry. But it was, I think he got overscored a little bit on a couple of his barrels. One wave he didn't do a turn on, and he got three barrels in a row, but, you know, his nose was never, you know, there was always a portion of him sticking out of the barrel on all three of those waves, which in the past would often get scored low. He got, I think, high eight for it.
Huh.
So... You know, if the conditions go south, like they very well may, at least at some point in this contest, I'm worried about that pick.
I tried to gain some insight into the Kelly Slater mind by going to his Instagram, and he tweeted a photo. It was actually on Twitter. He tweeted a photo of his plane ticket to to South Africa. And it just said first class, whatever. And he's like, on my way. I could read nothing from that. I did not gain any insight from that. I was like, does that mean Kelly Slater's going to kill it at this contest? Don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
I can tell you flies first class.
Yeah. I mean, what it does mean is that he showed up late, like relatively late, which isn't a new thing for Kelly and JBay because he's not a big fan of the cold water.
Another reason not to pick him.
Yeah. I mean, he has a weird relationship with JBay because it's a contest he has done well at in the past, but not a contest he necessarily loves. And I just don't know, man. I'm just not feeling it. I'm worried about it.
All right, you're worried. But you know what? For now, root for him. Anyway, 70% pick, though, for him?
Yeah, 70% of the people there that are playing the Fantasy Surfer.
And then you got Jordy Smith, 63%.
And Jordy, I'm feeling real good about.
Yeah,
the exact
I have
opposite.
Him, too. I have
See,
him,
now,
too.
Jordy, I wasn't sure about Jordy. I had Julian Wilson on my team. And actually, Julian did really well today,
he did.
Too.
He did. Comeback.
Yeah, comeback in the second round. Had a great heat.
I still don't like him.
Yeah.
His post-heat interview, like, he just seems so whiny. Like, you know, he just said, oh, it's the first time in a while that I've had good waves and all of these. I don't know what it is about him, but it just, to me, the reason that he's not on, for the same reason that Slater isn't on my team, is because if there are crap days, I feel that he might not perform.
Yeah. Well, I dropped him and I picked up Jordy, and I was worried about Jordy. Because,
why were you worried about Jordy?
Well, I mean, I know he's done well here in the past, but he's been having such a bad year. I just didn't know if I could trust him.
Has he been having a bad year, though? He kind of picked up the pace a little bit, right? He had a good contest. Fiji.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, the early part of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, he's like, cold. For so many years, we've been saying Jordy should be in the world title.
Right.
You know, discussion. And he never has been. For to me, that's where I define a good Jordy year. Like, he should be up there with, you know, Gabrielle and John in that top five, top, you know, 10 picture. And I don't think he's there, although you're looking it up quickly.
Yeah, let's look it up right now. Where is Mr. Jordy Smith?
Oh,
he is in 10th place.
So when he's close, but everyone's in.
Behind freaking Michelle Perez.
Yeah, Caio Abelli.
And Ace Buchan, who, by the way, Buchan on the team.
Nice. Yeah. Jordy, though, just before we move on to Buchan, and we should, Jordy looked amazing today. I would say he looked, of all the surfing I saw today, he had the best mixture of, like, aggressive turns without blowing the wave.
Yeah.
And whether that's because he was picking the best wave or because he just his knowledge of when to speed up or he's a little more free due to his experience with that wave. Like, I think his turns were just savage. Like, he was putting so much power into this turn at a wave where a lot of people are checking their turns so they have a little bit of time to, like, run ahead. He was putting it all on the line and it paid off for him big time.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's really happy to have him. He's the most fun to watch. And you know what I did this time, man, for picking? I decided I want to pick different people. Like, I was like, for me, it's time to move on. So if, like, Ferreira, he's gone, man. Like,
yeah, I got rid of him too.
Even though he'll probably do well. Like, I don't know. I just kind of felt like I wasn't even really looking forward to picking the team this contest. Yeah. I was like, you know, because we haven't been doing that well. And so it's hard to sort of get into it. Like, I swear, I was putting this off like homework, you know? And then finally, I'm like, all right, I got to just, like, open up the websites and, like, start reading, you know, the analysis and get down to it. And then once you do, it is kind of fun. Like, that's the thing. Once I got into it, I liked it. But part of what made it fresh for me this time around was to pick different people.
And is that how Ace ended up on your team?
Yeah, that's how. I had meant to put him on earlier, too. But, yeah, that's why Ace is on. And that's why I've got Kaloe on, who I wouldn't usually put on.
I mean, I guess I got to talk Kaloe. So what's your rationale there?
I can't remember. It was late last night.
Oh,
you know,
man.
Well, it was probably like looking at the matchup or whatever. Like, because he's through, right?
Yeah.
He made it through. So, what do you think? What's my rationale?
It didn't occur to me that he'd be someone I'd think of.
I will say, too, that I'm sure that somewhere I saw him on someone else's fantasy, like, advice team. You know what I mean? Like,
that's,
you know, because, you know, might as well get info where you can.
And lots of people are calling Ace. So, that's probably how you ended up with Ace as well, because a lot of people are saying, you know, coming off his strong performance.
My own personal insights in addition to whatever I was reading.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'll claim not too much knowledge in terms of why I picked Kaloe, but I definitely have been honing in on Buchan for a long time.
Yeah.
I think, though, that the thing is I honed in on him probably at the wrong time because I'm sure his pickup rate is way higher now. Anyway, can't get to that website. Ace Buchan. The only thing is that apparently no Goofy has won since 1984.
That's true, but Goofies have made it deep. I mean, that's the,
a crazy statistic.
Yeah, well,
that's
insane. It's a hard way for Goofies to surf, especially when it is, you know, classic sort of.
But I would think that there's no other wave that would be exclusively won by one side or the other. You know what I mean? Like, even like Chopu gets won by backhand, forehand, I'm sure more, you know, like statistically, if you were to just like, supposing that a third of the surfers on tour are Goofy, then, you know, in the past 20 years, they should have at least won, you know, 8 times.
Yeah.
Whereas they haven't won none. That's nuts.
Chopu would be actually an interesting one to look at because I think if you did look at the statistics there, it would be similar, except the opposite where it's almost always won by someone on their forehand. Even though they're going backside, just because that wave is so fast,
right?
That when you're dropping in on your, so if you're Goofy, you're dropping in,
then you're on your
forehand. Facing the wave,
and
it's almost impossible to slow yourself down enough to get in that barrel.
Yeah,
where on your backhand, they can just lay right into it.
Who won Chopes last year?
Gabriel Medina.
Right, and then who won it before then?
I don't know.
I'm getting my rounds confused too, because it was
last Owen Wright, I think.
Yeah, no, well, because
he's Goofy too.
No, because what was the contest where it was Slater John and then it went Slater Medina? That wasn't last year.
Oh man, our credibility's getting worse by the second.
Oh, are you kidding me? You can't memorize all of the different things. You can look it up.
I'm going to try.
That's going to be a tough one to get through.
Yeah. We'll talk more about your team.
Yeah, man. So I got Kaloe. He's going to kick ass. And then I got Medina, who also is going to kick ass. I mean, if anyone's going to be on I do have Medina. Do you not?
No, I do as well. But yeah. I didn't think – I'm trying to – man.
How did I'm I able to afford ADS? And yeah, I don't know. You know, I made it work.
Oh,
I spent every dollar. That's how it works.
That makes sense, though, because I was trying to think how, but it's because I have, my big money was Gabriel, Mick, and then I went with a whole bunch of like 65, 7,000.
Exactly, yeah, and my big money is DeSouza and Gabriel, and then everybody else is, like middle or low, so it's basically.
Did you keep Wilco?
No, man, I ditched Wilco.
Oh, man, that's a bummer.
He's not going to do well.
I think he might.
I think that he's so far ahead that he doesn't even need to do well.
Well, this having won his second round heat today, that means no matter what happens for the rest of this contest, he'll still be in the number one position heading into Chopin.
No matter who wins.
No matter who wins this
so
contest.
So there you go.
What
pressure's off a little bit. The thing is, I would give Wilco more credit than that. I think that he does have the fire in his belly and probably isn't, relaxing. And there was a quote, I can't remember, I think I actually read this somewhere, but someone did say that, that basically in terms of the matchups that he'll have going forward, he can basically put it on as a, quote, cruise control until about round five.
Yeah. I'm feeling good about Wilco because I think, and I think we've spoke about
another
this
backhander.
Well, he is a backhander, but I think that when in the years when people win titles, they get lucky heats. Like in any year where someone's won a title, they think back to those heats that people will say, oh, well, he wouldn't have won that title if he hadn't been pushed through that heat, or he got that lucky interference back at this contest. And if that hadn't happened,
he
might not have won.
And you're saying he hasn't had
one of those yet? No, I think today was that, man. Like he just, like local wild cards, you're the number one.
Poor guys.
You got the local wild card. Who is experienced at
the
wave.
It must be really stressful for the number one guy to go up.
Well, they have nothing to lose, and they often do, but he just squeaked by the barest margins.
Really?
I think it was a crazy low-scoring heat.
It was a crazy low-scoring heat.
I don't even think he broke 10.
You're right. It was really, really low. It was really low.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, leaving a local that surely had the wave come to him, he could have scored like the 3 or 5, like whatever it needs. So
it was a nail biter down to the end.
It was a nail biter. It was super close. And I just feel like destiny's on his side. Like, I think this is the type of turning point you'll look back on and be like, whoa, he squeaked through that. And then he went on and made
the
semifinals.
The other way he could be thinking too is like, if I can win this, I've got it locked.
Oh, if he wins this, I know he'll be solid at Chopu.
Yeah. But I even mean too, like with 3 event wins, I mean, you could probably not even show up for the rest of the season and still have a chance of winning.
I would say if he wins this contest, he'll be given the world championship in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. One way or the other. Agreed. No matter how it performs, the math will just work its way.
That's right, because no one else has consistent season so far, right?
Exactly.
So anybody who's chasing him is also dealing with throwaway, or for low keeper scores or whatever.
Although the way Gabriel and John performed today, we could be totally wrong about that, and they could stay in the picture
worst. That's the nightmare scenario: is that someone that we picked isn't going to win this contest?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, I still hope. I mean, the best seasons. I mean, apart from all the gambling and the wanting our teams to do well. If we could have a three-way race like we had last year going into Hawaii, I mean, that's great.
Yeah,
like, that
was
so
awesome.
That makes for a fun.
Totally.
That's like the pinnacle of surfing as entertainment. I mean, surfing at times can be hard to watch as a sport.
Yeah.
But when that's the point when every heat really does matter.
Yeah.
And it's easily not matter in sort of an esoteric way, like, if this happens, then 3 contests, where
we're talking about
Wilco
the
now.
Results are right in front of you.
Every heat you can say, if this happens, this guy's out, you can have the chart in front of you. So I am hoping that, I'm hoping Wilco wins, but I'm hoping he wins it in Hawaii this season.
What else we want to talk about? Oh, what I want to talk about? Toledo. Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, the thing is that he's got a pretty low pickup rate too, and I feel like maybe he's being underestimated. Like, there's this idea that he can't handle the big waves and doesn't have the solid turns and all that kind of stuff, that he's the air guy, not the carve guy. But I don't know, that doesn't seem to be true. Like, I watched his heats, and he carves just as good as anybody else does, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he's not the big wave guy. I mean, and I think a lot of that, although he did all right at Pipeline. I have to say, he had a couple of good waves at Pipeline.
Right. And he
coming
had
that
one,
that
like the
Chopu
thing.
But that just colors everyone's
but that's
memory
the thing, but,
so
but
bad.
So let me put this question to you, okay? What do you think is easier, for an air guy to learn big waves and to learn the power game, or for a big wave guy with a power game to learn the airs? Because I'm going to say it's the former that's easier. If you're going to become that all-around surfer, I think I'd rather start with the air game. Do you know what I mean? Because, the big, like the carve guys, with except obviously Jordy Smith is he probably developed those talents at the same time, right? But guys who are known for the big wave carve game, I don't see them ever getting the air game going real well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I think, yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's been proven by a lot of people, like even a Jordy Smith who started, I mean, as you know,
was he more of an air guy?
Oh, I mean, in his first year, he was getting through heats doing Superman airs that no one else did.
Really?
And that's how he was making heats. And that was the year he did best on tour.
See, I just assumed that he would have always had the carve game too, because he's so big,
but he's never become a big wave guy either. And that's where I draw the distinction. I think you're right up to a point. Like what I would say is that an air guy can become a good barrel rider,
right,
just through practice. Because I think a lot of the air guys come on, like, you know, you're not surfing a lot of long barreling reefs in Brazil. You can learn that just through traveling and through going to these contests early and putting in a whole winter, you know, multiple winters in Hawaii.
Barrel riding is a lot of just like learning knowledge.
I think, and it's like, and it's the confidence to like drop in late under balls, that lip, paddle down the wave, know how much to stall, how much not to stall, when to pump, all that. So I think you're right, but I think where that wouldn't hold up is when you get into the realm of the really big, scary, dangerous waves like Chopu when it's big.
Yeah.
And I think that's why that will stick with him. And I don't think that it's not that he can't ride Pipeline, which is a dangerous wave, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it's not, I think for them, I mean, I've never obviously surfed it, but I think it feels less dangerous. There's something about that level of Chopu when it's huge that I think it has to be in you. Like you have to be either one.
And maybe raised sort of like, on it, right? Like that,
raised on it so you don't care and you're comfortable in it, like a John.
Yeah.
Or sort of the like brain dead charger type that just has no sense for his like own mortality. Like that would be, to me, I think like the Andy Irons model. I mean, that's not really fair because he was also brought up surfing like big waves in Kauai. But I think some people just aren't smart enough to care. But I think the type of surfer that Felipe is, which is a very calculated surfer, you know, thinking of a long-term career, thinking about injuries he's had in the past, thinking, well, maybe I take two contests off here and then I do a little bit better later in the year and I secure my spot and I make some money. And, you know, I think that's not the type of mindset that lends itself to just
put you right over the ledge.
Yeah, just going for it when the consequences really.
But really,
are
that's
at the
only
highest.
I mean, in terms of world title, that's only one wave, right? I mean, so like, yeah, you can use, you know, just always have Chopu as your throwaway, and like you're good to go.
It's oh
like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
No,
like there aren't that many big waves for that to really matter.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. That's an interesting debate. I mean, people were. It was something that came
the Masters, out. More waiting on certain waves.
Yeah, I heard that it was on the Down the Line podcast.
Yeah,
but
is that what we're gonna call it now? The Down the Line podcast.
Oh, just to make David Scales pissed off.
I don't even listen to David's anymore.
Yeah, me either. Man. I'm old school.
Scott Bass gets his own first. Yeah, I listen to his.
Exactly.
And you know what? It makes more sense. It's like it's a story through. Boom. You know, he just says "What's up" or whatever his line
that's
is.
Funny. For people, if there is anyone out there that's interested in surfing, that's crazy enough to listen to our podcast but hasn't found this other podcast, I feel like it would be only fair.
I know. That's why we should not have any like, you know, hesitation talking about the other podcast.
Yeah, no, you should if you don't know about it, search Down the Line. Search Surf Splendor. They're doing a really good job over there. And in a lot of ways, probably inspired doing here.
Indeed they are. And that interview that they did, I learned a lot with whoever they had from the WSL. Yeah. I thought that was good.
But what I like about it is the idea of adding a proper big wave to the World Tour.
Right.
Because Chopu's a big barreling wave.
They talked it out and realized you can't do it because like the waiting period is not going to work. You know, like most waves, even if it's not firing, it'll still be contestable. Whereas at a big wave spot, it has to be firing, and you know it's too unpredictable.
I think that's true of a lot of them, but I think Puerto Escondido might be the
exception.
Yeah,
that could be one. You're right. Because what does Puerto look like when it's not big? I don't think I've ever seen Puerto when it's not big because no one bothers to.
Oh, it's still a good barreling.
They should put Puerto on then.
Yeah, it would
be good. Puerto on.
It'd be a tough place to run a contest given all the corruption in Mexico, but it would be interesting. But I think I say bring it back to the search idea, which is still I think the one thing that
move
the new version of the World Tour is missing when it was in its dream tour iteration had. And if you had the freedom to say once a year in a window that makes sense for, you know, say the Southern Hemisphere, and I don't even think you need to think about South America or anything, but just think, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, the places that they don't go, like, you know, Indonesia, the Medaways, you know, there's so many waves in that general part of the world. You know, we know when the swell is good there, and unfortunately it's in our summer when they sort of start heading towards, you know, Southern California for the big industry contest like the U.S. Open of Surf and things like that. But why not, you know, make some sort of gap between Chopu where you could fit in like a contest there. I mean,
I guess they just kind of think of Chopes as being the big wave, you know, like maybe it's got
G-Land. I mean, they went back to G-Land. That would be amazing. I would just like to see better waves like that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it really separates the best surfers in the world from, and I mean, that's a debate. I don't even know if we want, like, what is the best surfer? But for me, it's someone that can tackle these huge barreling waves and perform best at what I think we all aspire to, if only in our minds, like, you know, we could never tackle this ourselves. But, you know, if I could go, you know, maybe back in time and be a, you know, Grom and move to Hawaii when I was 7 and just start doing all this.
That's where your life went wrong, man.
I mean, I think what people aspire to is performing in big, critical, barreling waves. It's supposed to be the best feeling. I've never felt it.
Right.
So I think the people that perform best in those conditions should be the best surfer in the world. And I think we don't have to have the whole tour of that, but I think we need a little more of that.
Just put one, a movable wave. I'm into it. Yeah. You got no argument for me. You want to know something, though, that since we're talking about the Down the Line podcast, one issue that they seem to hammer home all the time, which I completely disagree with, is whether or not the judges should know the scores that the surfers need as they're giving them out, right? That there's some idea that if the judge knows he needs a 6.5, that then they are basically just deciding, well, do I want this guy to win the heat or not? And so they'll throw the score, you know, rather than doing it sort of like in a vacuum where they just look at the turn and then they give it the score. And so that's supposed to be like more objective, you know, objective, right?
Yeah.
That's like, that. This is their idea. That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing they do is that they compare waves, right? So they look at a wave and then they're like, okay, we gave this guy a 7.3 and it looked like this. Here's this guy's wave. What was he? What did he get again? A 7.3? I think this guy's was better. We better give it an 8. Yeah. You know, like that's how they judge it.
It was actually interesting you bring that up because it just brought me back to sort of this 2 a.m. in the morning watching the McFanning heat. But they did a few things that I think have actually been suggested in the past on the Down the Line and on other podcasts, that they actually showed a shot of the judges in the judges booth with the head judge, Richie Porter,
sort of
walking along them to sort of put faces to these people.
Yeah.
But more interesting than that, they talked about that there has been, and it's been driven by the commissioner's office and Kieran Perreault, apparently, a real shift to take the head judge role out of the equation. So in the past, you know, the head judge would actually be, if he saw scores that were out of whack, he would actually be addressing that
with
individual conversation, judges. Right?
Yeah, like you kind of go over like, so why'd you give him that score?
Yeah, but through a conversation within the heat. So it was happening that scores would be changed mid-heat because there was this one overarching figure. Now what they said on the podcast is that he's not there to do that at all. He's there to find out, you know, do you need a replay? You know, he's there to sort of help the judges.
Does the head judge throw scores?
No, the head judge doesn't throw scores.
Okay.
But in the past, he would sort of be almost acting as like a correlator.
Some consistency.
Almost. Like if something was at a whack, he would like...
Which to me makes sense. I don't know.
I don't think it does though. Because I think now you really... If surfing's a subjective sport, I think...
You need multiple points of view.
I think people need... Yeah, you need multiple points of view. And this
throw
allows...
Throw the high and the low and do it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if there was someone that was wildly out of whack too, then they'd be shown out. I mean, if you talk about the quality of judging, if there's someone that's so consistently away from the pack, then in under this process where they're free to do that, eventually they would be shown out as just not a strong judge and then get someone better.
Right.
So I was really encouraged to see that.
Because, well, I mean, that's an interesting point too, if they're consistently either too high or too low compared to everyone else, that then, and you remove them for that reason, it then motivates judges to try to kind of guess what the other judges.
I hadn't thought that down
but no,
the
no,
line,
but that's okay.
Right?
But no, but that makes sense, right? Like if you think about it, if you're a judge and you're sitting there, you got to be thinking, I wonder what the other judges are going to throw.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you want that sort of to be in line with what they're doing, right? Yeah. It's just part of, you know, it's like asking, you know, what would Jesus do or something. You
but
know?
Judging's so subjective.
Here, speaking of a subjective sport that is judged, here we go.
This is an old jawbreaker right here. And it's ought to be good watching. Yep. Oh, boy. Main jawbreaker. Right there, Oh, I mean
bullfighting.
What the fuck?
Bullfighting. It's bull riding, guys.
Oh, whatever.
Bull riding, man. So the thing is, because we're always searching for, you know, the analogy, right? And a lot of times, you know, what do people compare? I've heard rock climbing is a good sort of comparison, you know, because it had, you know, it's like different locations.
I didn't actually know that there was competitive rock climbing.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Really?
I think we've talked about this, but anyway, bull riding I think makes sense because so what it is I actually have it up here if I can even find it. But what it is it's based on the bull. So judging at the conclusion, so first of all, you have to ride it for 8 seconds. So length of ride actually does matter, but forget that.
Okay.
So a bull is judged on his athleticism and difficulty to ride. This takes into account spin, right, left, direction changes, movement back and forth, kicking up high in the air, and dropping the front body, body roll. But you know what I mean? So the bull just goes crazy, and you're just supposed to look at it and go like, ooh, that bull was crazy, you know, and really muscular, which is totally out of the control. I mean, in another sense, it's not analogous because the rider has no control over which bull they get, whereas in surfing, yeah, you have control over what wave you get. Yeah. But still, part of what you're scoring. So if you're a bull rider and you get a wimpy bull,
yeah,
you are not going to score very well.
You suffer for it.
You suffer for it, which is the same as surfing.
Yeah, it is, because they are, I mean, they're already taking into account. But I guess this is the question. I don't watch bull riding, so I don't know. But is there room to be made that if you get a wimpy bull,
but you kick
but
its
you
ass,
ride it forever,
no,
can you,
well,
you win?
It's only 8 seconds, right? And so this is the thing, no, and that's why it's kind of
like
surfing.
Does style come into account?
Boom. So the second part, the second criteria, a rider is judged on how in control he is during the ride. This takes into account how he matches and counters the bull's move, how centered he is, how fluid his movement is during the bull ride. Extra points may be awarded for style, such as spurring. So yeah, like if you kick the bull as you're riding along. But you can see that that's subjective too. But but you know what I mean? That the idea is that you're in harmony with the bull. Like it moves, you move. And so to me, I feel that there's a lot of similarities there.
What I like about it is it would almost, I mean, if you were to follow this idea further, I keep saying down the line now that it's in my head, but
Surf Splendor.
Yeah, if you were following this idea further down the line, you would get to the point where it's almost like you'd formalize what's already being done, which is that you are judging the wave. So I could see where instead of a score out of 10, maybe you have 2 scores out of 5. So
right,
you know, this guy has taken, you know, if the best set wave that you've seen in that heat, you know, so say the first wave comes through, and it would make it easier if it is a big set.
But
and
I
say
do
that's
think that
like a 4.5 for the wave.
Yeah.
And then the person's performance on it is a 3, and then you end up with a 7.5. Right.
That'd be crazy to get a score simply for standing up on a wave. Like, so automatically, if you get up on a wave, like...
But it rewards. I mean, it rewards wave knowledge. It rewards, like, catching the best wave of the set,
but
which
in
bull
riding,
rewarding.
But in this, it is a meld, right? So in this, there isn't 2 scores, right? Like, so that basically those are the two criteria, but they don't separate it out like that in bull riding.
So that is similar then to what they are doing.
Do you know what I mean?
Surfing.
That they just sort of take it into account.
Yeah.
Which I think, yes, you know, because the thing too is that, like, you know, people want to compare like figure skating or something like that, because those are also subjective sports, right? But in figure skating, you have very specific criteria, right? Like you get a number of points for doing like a triple, a double, which is nothing like surfing, right? Like surfing really is, it's basically just like, oh, that was a sick ride.
Do you think they could ever do that though? Like get to the point where they define like, you know, the perfect cutback is only ever going to be worth 2.
Yeah.
No matter the most perfect Mick Fanning, fully wrapped around.
Yeah, yeah.
Smoothly
that
come
would
out
be
of it,
interesting.
That's only ever going to be worth a 2.
And you can only do 2. So you can only get like a possible 4 if you do only cutbacks.
Yeah.
And so you're judged out of 4 on cutbacks.
Yeah.
I like
the most
idea.
Perfect barrel can be 4 points. Or, well, really, the most perfect
and
barrel can be 10 points.
Forces you, and that forces you. But imagine supposing that a barrel can, if all you do, like a barrel can only be worth a maximum of 8. Right. So then, you can hit that barrel and rip it perfectly, but then it still forces you to try to do something else.
Do something
at the end,
right?
Do one of those cutbacks.
Yeah. And then you could even get
down. It would push it.
It would be a way to really evaluate the airs better, too, because we've talked about this before, and it's the idea that people seem to be scored when they do airs against themselves. So if someone that's not known for doing airs does a crappy air, they get a big score.
Yeah.
Someone that's an air master does the same air and gets a bad score. If you were to be able to actually say, like, you know, a standard air reverse that's 2 feet above the lip is only worth 1 point, and take that as the starting thing, you know, and then if it's, you know, 3 feet above the lip, it's worth another point. If you do it back, or if it's a 360, like full rotate, that's worth more of a point.
I'm trying to think if figure skating has a maximum score, because surfing would have a maximum score. Because, I mean, the thing is that, you know what I mean? Because, like, on a wave like Jay Bay, it seems like you could, you know, supposing you're allowed only two cutbacks, but then you could do... Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting discussion about the judging, though.
While you're looking things up and inserting them, you can go back and find Bobby Martinez talking about... Oh, no, he was saying it was a tennis tour, not a figure skating tour, which made no sense, because tennis is
wannabe.
Not, yeah.
He was just saying that the WSL or the ASP was trying to become, like, you know, country club. Yeah. No, you know what I mean? He was railing against the system.
Mentioning Bobby, though, brings me back to the one guy on my team I didn't mention, Connor Coffin.
Yeah. Another is he on your team?
He's on my team. Hmm. He's on a lot of people's teams.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that well in that first heat against Mick. Because that was the other. That's the other one I saw live
and
this morning.
And he's still coming up, right?
Yeah, he's still coming up. Hasn't had a second round heat yet. And I'm
worried about him.
I'm worried about him a little bit. I think I know he can surf that wave well. I've seen it happen.
Right. Well, he was a favorite, I'm sure.
Oh, he is a favorite because of that video he did with his brother a couple of years ago where he killed it. But the mistakes he was making this morning are not the type of mistakes that are going to get you far in a contest.
Yeah.
I mean, coming out with two big turns.
Okay, you got Connor.
Third
turn. Who else? Oh, and then you got Stu.
Yeah, that's all. Connor was the only one I didn't mention. I got Fanning, Medina, Wilco, John, Kelly, Jordy, Connor, and Stu.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, and I think I mentioned everybody that I wanted to talk about.
So we should probably wrap it up
soon. Wait, I got one more little cool thing to talk about. And actually, this kind of wraps in nicely, you know, because I've been doing this thing, and I don't think it really makes any sense to do it, but I do it anyway, is compare how surfers do from one event to the other. So I did it again. So last year, I look at who made the quarters in Fiji, okay?
Okay.
So you got eight guys who make the quarters in Fiji. So you take a guess, how many of the eight guys who made the quarters in Fiji made the quarters in Jay Bay in 2015? How many guys?
Not from one year to the next.
No, it was in the same year.
Oh, yeah, man, there's such different waves. I'd say three.
Two.
Really?
So only two. Yeah. So if you have, so last, by the way, here's another fun game. I now know all the surfers by two letters, right? So who's WD, Ken?
No idea.
Wiggly Dantas. Who's TB?
Tajboro.
I think he actually goes. Who's IF?
Italo Ferreira.
Who's JW?
Julian Wilson. But
who's
OW? He prefers J-Dub.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Who's JP?
I don't know.
Joel Parkinson.
Oh, shit.
Who's KO?
What did Parko do? Did he make it through? Did he get knocked out?
No, man. Oh, Parko?
Today.
What happened to Parko?
Oh, man.
I can't. My mouse is all broken. I think I saw that Parko.
Did he even compete
in this event?
Oh, yeah. He's there. And a lot of people thought he was going to be.
You know, my mouse is working suddenly. Oh, but of course I'm not. Look it up on your phone. Yeah. Anyway, that's a fun game, eh? Who's AB?
It's Bucking.
I'm just saying that people could be playing along at home. Who's GM?
Oh my God, it's not that fun.
No, it's kind of fun. Medina. Anyway, so basically in Fiji in 2015, it was Julian Wilson, Italia Ferrero, Tosh Burrow, Wiggly Donatis, Owen Wright, Joel Parkinson, John Florence, and KO.
Oh yeah, so Parko didn't make it through his first heat. He's up against Banting in round two.
Okay, he's gonna smoke him. So yeah, and so the only people that made it from Fiji to Jay Bay quarters to quarters was Julian Wilson. And Kai Otten. And then if you look at actually the semis, only one person made it through. So, super interesting. Go back to 2014. Guess how many of the eight surfers made it from this quarters?
Oh, that was the big swell too, wasn't it?
Yeah, so quarters in Fiji to quarters in Jay Bay. How many?
Five.
Two, again.
Whoa.
Same. So, the thing is then...
Who are the two this year?
Right, so
That's the question. So
this is the thing, right? And because I almost thought about doing this, right? So if you look at who made the quarters in Fiji, it was Gabriel Medina, De Souza, Kelly Slater, Dantas, Bucking, Fanning, Wilson, and John Florence. So according to what those statistics show, you should only be picking two of those guys.
Whoa.
Do you know what I mean? And those guys were all like super heaters, man.
And that's like half my team.
Yeah,
more
exactly.
Than half my team.
So... So it'd be interesting to see if that bears out. You know what I'm going to try to
follow?
Well,
make your picks. So who are your two?
Well, so I even do this? Because I got Gabriel Medina and
ADS.
And who else? And I think that's it. Oh, no, I've got John Florence too. Yeah. So I didn't follow it.
Yeah.
But I came close. I dropped I dropped Dantas. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. I'm tired.
I want to say Fanning and Gabriel will be the two that make it out of that.
Yeah.
but I'm worried ADS is going to be one of them.
Anyway, and you know what's interesting? I was even willing to go further back in the stats, but guess what? It was either Fiji, I think it was Jay Bay, wasn't on the tour.
Yeah, it fell off for, I think, quite a while.
Yeah, like I went back and I couldn't find it, you know?
That was before.
So they do juggle it around, right?
Well, they didn't have a sponsor, and that was before the WSL when you couldn't run sponsorless events.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why was that? And why did they change it? Two questions.
The reason they didn't have a sponsor was, I think, tied up. I think Billabong.
No, but why wouldn't they run it without a sponsor?
Because there was no governing body that had any money. So the ASP was only like a facilitating body didn't have any of its own money.
Oh, I see.
Just a sanctioning
body.
That's
the difference, is it? That the WSL now will back events even if it doesn't have a sponsor.
Yeah, so that's why the WSL has brought in all these sponsors that sponsor the WSL, like Samsung being, Jeep being another big one.
Yeah.
And that's why some of these contests, like Fiji, didn't have a, I think they call it a title sponsor. So, you know, so it's the Quicksilver Pro at Snapper.
Right.
But there was no company pro at Tahiti, you know, it's just.
And there's nothing at J Bay?
No.
And was there anything at Fiji?
Fiji, no. So no, it's like Fiji, J Bay.
Name the sponsorless events. Ken.
I think Chopu is also a sponsor. Or no, Billabong's Chopu.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's sign it off because we've been talking for way too long.
Whoa, well, no, it's been fun. And I hope everyone has a wonderful rest of the contest. And we'll be back when the contest ends to revel in our success.
In the meantime, I'll leave you with more bull riding. Bye.
New bull from Terry Walls we haven't seen much of. Boy, he sets him up, and then, I mean, sets him up again, and then brings him.
Horn right there into the chest, and that's thankfully why they wear the vests. We've already had our four tough stuff moment of the round. Perhaps we should add a second one.
This guy's just trying to stay on board. Get his first qualified ride of the season, trying to stay on board the tour. He needs to get some scores. Big gun starts left into his hand and then goes down hard. Dusty taking a couple of big shots.
Yeah.